Michael swung down out of the saddle and dropped to one knee, tracing the outline of the horseshoe print with his finger in the dust.
Is it the same shoe, Michael?
Cast off a little with a deformed nail head. Yeah.
Michael stood and stretched. He stared toward the setting sun, but averted his eyes slightly. The glare bothered him. He was stiff and tired from riding horseback through these wastelands, where once there was rainforest, and now there was encroaching desert. Paul rubbed his sore backside a little as he took a break from the saddle.
The Germans have a plan for this place.
Yes, they have a plan for everything, God bless them. Use plasma energy to melt sections of the mountain snows and bring water back to the land so the trees they want to plant will grow.
All I know is that I'm tired of the air everywhere being as thin as something at the top of a mountain.
It's even thinner there.
When they attacked the Nazi redoubt, part of the reason for the gas masks was that they were connected to small compressed oxygen units, bleeding in a richer mixture to their normal air supply. Otherwise, unused to the horribly thin air at the higher altitudes, they would have been incapable of sustained physical exertion.
Maybe their plan will work. At least to start.
Paul bent over to stare at the hoofprints on the ground.
Still six sets. It has to be Nazis to be out here.
Has to be.
But as Michael looked up, he noticed Paul was no longer looking at the footprints. Paul was looking at him.
What happens if... assuming we nail these guys, none of them knows anything about Zimmer. I mean, you know I'll go on as long as you want to. So will Annie and Natalia. But you can't spend your whole life in pursuit of revenge. Your mom and dad wouldn't want you doing it. For 6 months now, we've been alternately going through every Nazi-era record in New Germany and all the stuff that was found at their mountain hideout, and then going into the field to pursue the next set of leads. We've killed or captured 26 men, and not one of them, even under drugs, has known anything about Zimmer's whereabouts. I don't think we're going to get him, Michael, even if we devote the rest of our lives to it.
Michael said nothing.
Look, Michael, like I said, we're all with you. You think we got a chance of getting this schmuck, fine. You never see me quit. But if we don't, if we just spend the rest of our lives doing this, then what?
What do you mean?
There is a world out there your father and mother would be busting their butts to rebuild if they were with us. You know that. All you're doing is becoming an expert on neo-Nazis and a great hand in tracking people down, but that's not doing anything to make this place a better place. If Zimmer surfaces anywhere, he'll be arrested or shot. With Akira running Eden, we don't even have to worry about Dodd anymore.
I wonder. Anyway, we still owe him.
Well, kill Dodd, and even Akira will say it's too much, Michael. Akira pulled the plug on the charges against Natalia and the rest of us. Sure, I'd like to twist Dodd's head off and crap down his neck, and if you say we should do it, I'm with you. Just like Annie and Natalia are with you. All I'm saying is that maybe there are some better things we should be doing. Things John and Sarah would have wanted us to do. Like, whatever happened to you pursuing a medical education?
So I can find out my father's and mother's conditions are hopeless? I already know that, Paul. Anyway, every time I'm in New Germany, almost invariably, I bump into Maria. With her marrying, it's even more awkward than before.
How about Midwake?
No. I could give you a bunch of reasons why I don't want to live there, but in the final analysis, they're all excuses. Paul, I want to see the world. See what's out there that we've missed. Being a doctor worked for Dad, but I can't save lives with one hand and take lives with the other. I could never be the doctor he...
Michael, you can do anything you set your mind to.
Look, you may have been born a couple of decades before I was, but chronologically, I'm older than you are. And I'm not your 17-year-old nephew or something who just decided to get a tattoo and drop out of high school.
Touché, Michael.
The point is, I know what I don't want to do. At least that's a start.
Michael looked along the trail, the hoofprints vanishing in the distance over the rise.
And I know we probably won't find Zimmer, Paul. And sometimes I wonder what I'd do if I did. Mom and Dad never taught me to commit murder, but God, I'd never forgive myself if I didn't kill that bastard. How he could do that? Murder a baby? Jesus.
Michael balled his fists, trying to keep the tears from coming, because sometimes they still did.
If we find him, we kill him. And we both know that. Whether it's murder or not, who cares? It can't be a moral consideration to kill a man like Zimmer. But if we don't find him, and yet spend the rest of our lives looking for him, maybe we'll be giving him two more kills to his credit, huh?
Michael rolled the reins of his horse between his hands, then looked at Paul. A man Michael never heard of before the attack on the hospital was responsible for the near-death state in which his father and mother now existed and would perhaps exist forever, and the murder of their child.
A little longer?
Yeah, we'll look a little longer. But I tell you, if we're still saying this years from now, well, I don't know.
Michael caught the horn and swung up into his saddle. Paul mounted up and they both continued along the trail. The desert was gone. It was night, and John was inside a house. He recognized it. It was the sprawling farmhouse they lived in before the night of the war. But it wasn't then, before the night of the war, because at the dinner table, along with Sarah, sat a grown-up Annie, a grown-up Michael. Natalia and Paul were there, too. On either side of John's empty dinner plate lay his guns.
Have you seen the baby, John?
No, I haven't.
Sarah just smiled. When John looked down, his plate was no longer empty. He looked more closely at the plate, because what was there was not food, but the United States. It looked like the outline of the North American continent as it would be seen from space, and there were lights twinkling everywhere. He looked closer and started to mention what he saw to the others at the table, but around he saw nothing but black, except for the outline of North America in the distance, and the lights. The lights were different now, growing in intensity. As he stared, the lights became flashes, mushroom-shaped clouds erupting everywhere, brilliantly, more and more of them, their light obscuring the shape of the continent, one flash after another, after another, after another. John looked around. He was sitting in an airplane. The airplane rocked, lurched, seemed almost to twist. John Rourke knew what was happening. It was the night of the war, and he was condemned to relive it. The city, of more than 2,000 people, grew up almost overnight, or more accurately, over 60 nights or so. 4 months ago, there was nothing but desert where the Amazonian city of Manaus once stood, a wasteland where alternately hot and cold sandy winds blew, and nothing of great consequence besides insects and rats lived. Like all of northern and central Brazil, when the fires came that burned the sky in the great conflagration, they wiped out the rainforest, and with it, moisture. The Amazon and its major tributaries, like the Negro, still flowed, to be sure, but they were not rivers, the arteries of a once thriving nation, not highways through the greatest green area on the face of the earth. They were merely water. There were fish, mostly bottom dwellers, but fewer species because the sun beat down without mercy in the daylight hours, with no canopy of vegetation to provide shade. Night brought the cold. No life along the river, only eroded deserts, too vast to contemplate. Many tributaries no longer flowed. Part of the German plan for regreening the Amazon and eventually reoxygenating the atmosphere included freeing water frozen in mountain ice for irrigation of the high mountain deserts. So what once had been Manaus on the River Negro, in north-central Brazil, was now the boomtown for the new ecology. The figure Natalia trailed, Armand Gruber, was a non-entity of a man, really. But for now, he was the most important man in the world to her. Gruber turned into the little pub packed with mustered-out German soldiers working in the bio project, some Chinese engineers, and a few people who looked like they could be Americans from Midway. Some reports suggested that soon Russians would arrive. Natalia did not long for their presence. If Natalia Anastasia Tiamarovna wanted to hear her native tongue that badly, she could always talk to herself.
Not bad.
Natalia glanced at her mirror image in the shop window, primped her light brown hair, and adjusted her glasses. Then she looked back down the street. This was the bad area of Open Town, as the name of the new Manaus translated into English. The jobs as police and security for the city paid little compared to the hard labor or the tech jobs, so law enforcement personnel were hard to find, and there wasn't enough open lawlessness to bring in the army. Built of prefab units, the streets wide enough to easily handle 4 lanes of construction traffic if needed, the bad section of Open Town was the only place where the people who worked in the new industry could come to unwind. Annie had followed Gruber into the bar the previous night and got away with just a few black and blue marks from pinches on her posterior. From Natalia's vantage point, beside the shop window displaying cheap knives, cheap binoculars, cheap canteens, cheap everything, made in Russia, she could watch the door of the bar. At New Germany, Natalia and Annie, waiting for Michael and Paul to return from their latest field trackdown, became privy to intelligence data concerning a new Nazi cell in Opentown. Agents of the government of New Germany worked to infiltrate the cell, but their success potential was dubious. And although Paul and Michael would have preferred to pursue the lead themselves, Natalia was sure, there was much to be said for two women being vastly more able to dig out information in a wild boomtown where men outnumbered women more than 7-1. A trip for the right clothes. Annie was pathological about shopping, and some quick rinse hair dye, and they were on their way. They both took office jobs in the bio industry. Annie as a bio consultant from Midwake, and Natalia as a German national in environmental engineering. With her knowledge of computers and her quick mind, she carried off her disguise rather well. Armand Gruber, after a week of observation, somehow seemed just right, and the bar, brazenly called the Lightning Bolt, was a rumored hangout for neo-Nazi sympathizers. Because New Germany was a free society, thinking like a Nazi was not a crime. Acting like a Nazi was another story. Natalia approached the entrance. She opened the door and went inside. Michael ran his hand over his face, covered with stubble so old it was almost a beard. Water here was scarce, and shaving dry was something he felt no need to try. There was slight movement in the darkness to his left. The Beretta on his thigh was in his hand and pointed toward the origin of the sound. But as he anticipated, it was Paul returning. His friend and brother-in-law dropped quietly to the ground beside him.
We got him. All six of them. Gotta be the same guys we've been tracking for the last 10 days or so. I mean, no Nazi armbands or anything, but they all look pretty well-dressed, all things considered. And they're heavily armed.
The thing I can't figure is what the hell they're doing riding around out here all this time.
Beats me. Unless they wanted us to follow them.
That's crossed my mind, too. But I figured if they were some kind of hit team...
You watched too many videotape movies when you were a kid.
You know, you're right, Paul. Annie and I should have gone to the opera, to theater, and probably NASCAR when we were the only people on the planet. Anyway, if they are a hit team, it could be Zimmer who set them up. So maybe we'll get lucky.
A lot of times you remind me of your dad so much it's scary. But then sometimes you don't. And maybe that's scarier.
Michael picked up his rifle. The sling and swivels were taped to prevent noise. If the six men they followed were a hit team, suckering them into a trap, there was no sense in making it easier for them to do their work. Natalia eased up on her toes and slipped onto a bar stool, letting her dress ride up just a little to show some thigh.
Yes, Fräulein.
Vodka tonic, please.
Good. I get tired of women ordering things that ruin the glamour in the bar, too.
Then he was gone, leaving her to wonder just what some of the women ordered. Men filled the place, some dressed in trendy suits of New Germany that looked like Nehru jackets, some in work clothes, and some few in casual clothes. The bar boasted a disproportionate number of women here, considering the sexual demographics of Opentown, some of them in obvious working clothes, too. Under Nazism, prostitution flourished no less than under other forms of government, merely keeping itself well below the surface to avoid direct conflict with the law. In Opentown, as it had been for centuries everywhere, prostitution was illegal, but Natalia had noticed no one seemed to care. Lights flickered across the dance floor while the dancing itself was more reminiscent of the Latin dance forms that enjoyed some vogue before the night of the war, men and women all but copulating in time to the music. As Natalia took in the scene, a man sat down on the stool next to her.
Buy you a drink, lady?
She mentally shrugged.
With that accent, he must be from Midwake.
I already have a drink coming.
As if on cue, the bartender brought her drink and set it down beside her right hand.
See?
Name's Bob Jessup, man.
He was long-legged, had a face that looked like he'd seen a few fistfights in his life, and blue eyes that smiled like a boy's.
I'm Heidi Frober.
Jessup offered his hand, and she took it briefly. His flesh was warm and dry.
Are you an American?
Oh, Midwake Marine until peace broke out, man. You German?
Yes. Do you work with the bio team?
Diver. I go skinny dipping up in the river every day. Used to do the same thing with a gun back in the Corps. Well, same difference, only the pay's better and the food tastes, well, not as good. What you do?
Here?
No, I mean, regular. since you ain't one of the working girls.
That's nice of you. I work in engineering with computers. I agree, the money is very good, but the food is terrible, I think.
He was so American, and it would have been so easy for her to drop into his accent, but she kept the German intonation and inflection to her English.
You all dance?
I just met you.
I have a dangerous job. There might not be a tomorrow night, lady.
She liked his style, and she hadn't danced in a place like this in 500 years.
All right.
Gruber was on the dance floor, and she'd be able to keep a better eye on him there. Michael moved ahead on knees and elbows, his rifle in both fists at eye level. Their horses were tethered and hobbled almost a half mile away, so a stray noise would not betray their presence to the enemy personnel. Paul would be coming up on the far side of the camp. As Michael crawled forward, he stopped beneath a piece of half-dead scrub. He could see the camp clearly. The fire burned too bright. Aside from the fact it was a natural attention-getter, something six men on the run would try to avoid, even this far from what civilization there was, the fire was also a waste of wood. The nights were cool, but not cold unless the winds blew right, and wood for burning was hard to find. It was a trap, almost certainly, but Michael planned ahead. He took four things of his father's to hold for him, and use if he had to. Michael took John's watch, the little A.G. Russell Sting 1A Black Chrome, the Smith & Wesson Model 640 Centennial Revolver, and the old battered Zippo Windlighter. The Rolex watch was in storage at Midwake for his father if... when, Michael told himself, his father awoke from this new sleep. The lighter Michael carried as a memento. The gun and the knife Michael carried in the event he did find Dietrich Zimmer to use them in ending Zimmer's miserable life. Michael could see all six men, or what appeared to be six men, in sleeping bags, just close enough to the fire to be seen, but not close enough to be seen distinctly. He crawled on over the rough ground toward his pre-selected position. He found no tripwires, no alarms of even the most primitive type set as a perimeter alert system.
Where the hell's the perimeter security?
Natalia, despite herself, was having a good time. Bob Jessup was a good dancer, his arms strong around her, but he never once attempted to touch her in a way that was less than gentlemanly. And she could watch Armand Gruber, who left the dance floor and sat deep in conversation at a small corner table with a woman of about 30. The woman's clothes and manner stood in sharp contrast to Gruber. She was dressed cheaply, but carried herself beautifully.
Heidi?
Yes?
Old line, at least the midweight, but... what's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?
You are right. It is an old expression. In answer to the question, though, I am actually a spy. And I followed a very desperate character.
Right.
Natalia smiled up at him.
Well, so don't tell me.
Well, Open Town is very boring. All I do is sit around at a computer terminal all day long. Tell me about your job. It sounds very exciting.
With a new song, they started back to the bar. Natalia's drink was still there, but she wasn't about to touch it after it sat unattended. Bob Jessup signaled the bartender.
Could you get me a glass of water?
Sure. I don't drink a lot myself. Couldn't when I was on duty, and never figured it made much sense to blow a weekend pass, spending every dime I had on the first couple of hours, then throwing up the rest of the time. If you'll pardon the French.
Natalia hadn't heard the expression in years, and how thoroughly stupid a situation this was. What was she going to do when Armand Gruber decided to leave? Her water arrived along with a beer for Jessup. He raised his glass.
To pretty German girls.
To handsome American men. Is it very dangerous, diving all the time?
Ever try?
No, no. I would be afraid to try.
I'll take it if you want.
Oh, that would be nice, but I do not know.
Armand Gruber and the blonde wearing a tight black vinyl skirt and low-cut black top got up. They started toward the back, where there were several doors.
What you looking at?
Looking up?
Well, that little guy and the bleak blonde hooker. Are they interesting?
Natalia looked at Bob Jessup, for once flat-footed and without a ready answer. So she said nothing, but still watched Armand Gruber and the bleached blonde hooker. Natalia took her purse from the bar and clutched it in her lap. The Walter PPKS was inside it, and so was the suppressor. but the bag wasn't long enough to accommodate gun and silencer assembled. Jessup just stared at her. She stared back.
So, maybe you are a spy.
I have to leave, Bob. Thanks for the dance.
He put his right hand on her left arm. Natalia moved her right hand to rest between her knees so she could push up her dress to get the Balisong knife strapped to the inside of her left thigh.
If there's something wrong, maybe I can help.
The possibilities were limited. Start a scene and attract Gruber's attention, or take Bob Jessup along. She could always dump him later.
All right, but do exactly what I say. Come with me.
Natalia slipped off the bar stool.
Yes, ma'am.
Michael plotted every conceivable spot for a trap, but one of the six sleepers by the fire turned out to be in the rocks to his left.
Do not move, O'Rourke.
Michael wasn't at all surprised. He froze.
Now, drop the rifle in front of you.
Michael let the rifle fall from his fingers. Michael started to his feet.
Stay where you are.
Michael stood anyway. The two Berettas in the shoulder holster he wore would take care of most close-range situations if he could get to them. But as his father always insisted, Michael planned ahead. He raised his hands, clasping them behind his head.
You've got me. Why don't you shoot and get it over with?
You will die soon enough, O'Rourke.
Michael nodded, but didn't think so. The sleeves of his black German field jacket were wide to accommodate the liner and heavy clothing beneath when weather demanded. Tonight, Michael Rourke wore neither liner nor anything heavier than a black knit shirt beneath the jacket. Strapped in a skeletonized holster to the inside of his right forearm was his father's little Smith & Wesson revolver. Michael, his hands behind his head, had the revolver gripped in his left hand. There was movement, and the man with the drop on him emerged from the rocks.
I had expected more from O'Rourke.
Well, always tough following in your father's footsteps. Why are we whispering? Oh, so if I made some noise, your guys out there wouldn't be able to spring a trap on my friend.
The Jew.
Hey, lighten up. I mean, Paul's the only Jew I know well, but he's like my brother. I met a couple of Jews at Midway. They seemed okay, too. Ever think you and your Nazi buddies got all this wrong?
The man took a step forward, which was the best Michael Rourke could hope for. Michael dodged left and dropped to one knee as he stabbed the little stainless steel .38 special out at shoulder height. The shot still echoed in the night as Michael caught up his rifle in his right hand. There was no need to shout to Paul because they planned for the contingency of unexpected shots. Gunfire tore into the ground near Michael's feet and the rocks behind him. Michael threw himself into the darkness behind some low rocks and scrub brush. His M16 spoke in a long burst. He was moving again before the answering fire could zero in on his muzzle flashes. The doorway through which Armand Gruber and the blonde woman disappeared led to the outside. Bob Jessup seemed like a nice guy, and for some reason she didn't quite understand herself, Natalia liked him. She dropped the German accent from her English as she opened her purse.
Look, you might get yourself killed, Bob. Stay here. This is Nazi stuff.
Nazis?
She nodded her head. He shrugged his shoulders.
You got a gun, huh?
Natalia nodded again. In the marginal lighting, there at the end of the corridor, she could see Bob Jessup's smile.
Me too. I wasn't a Marine for nothing, lady. Hey, your name really had it?
What do you think?
Amateurs could get a person killed, but there wasn't time for anything else, even an answer. Her hand on her gun, with the Walther still inside her bag, her left hand went to the door handle.
Ladies first.
Natalia pushed past Jessup. As she passed through the doorway, the Walther came out of her bag and down along her right thigh. Beyond the doorway stretched a dirt alley. Trash compactors stood ranked along its length in both directions.
People don't change much in 5 centuries.
An electric car with a badly damaged right rear fender sat parked at the end of the alley. Natalia saw it just in time to see a flash of blonde hair as the passenger door closed and the car started to drive off.
Damn!
You won't follow it?
You have an electric car?
Better. Unless you were serious back there about being scared of things.
I don't follow.
Hey, we got a knot. Come on.
Jessup ran for the alley's mouth, Natalia hot on his heels. Three men hunkered near the fire, and Michael's gunfire to their unprotected position took two of them out almost instantly. What must have been Paul's gunfire from the opposite side of the camp took out the third one.
Should be two more, Paul. I got one over here.
One more. I got a guy with my knife.
Michael shifted position slowly, carefully. The sixth man could have been 200 yards away or more and could have one of them under a starlight scope. The thought gave Michael an idea.
How do you think some eggs would go right now?
Egg was a slang term he picked up from his father for flashbangs, sound and light grenades. Through a starlight scope, the flash of a sound and light grenade would be as blinding as the flash of a nuclear weapon. If Paul caught his drift...
We could get killed!
Not we, me. Don't worry.
Worrying's part of my ethnicity. You say when?
Michael studied the terrain surrounding them. Flat, ideal for a sniper in almost any direction. But if the guy were really good, and this had to be a hit team, he'd take the best spot not only for a shot, but also for a getaway in case things went wrong. That meant the sniper was to the north, where there was a narrow pass that a well-thrown explosive device could block if the need arose. Michael put on his ear protection, then the glasses that in darkness like this made him almost blind. He kept his gaze trained on the fire. Through the protective glasses, it merely glowed. Michael came from cover, heading toward the fire as if to examine the bodies of the three dead men there. There was no timing this thing. If he waited too long, he'd be dead. Michael got halfway to the fire, just the perfect mixture of light and dark for the sniper's starlight scope.
Now, Paul!
The first grenade hit as a shot caught Michael across the left kidney as he threw himself down at attention to what he anticipated, correctly, was the sniper's line of fire. Michael squinted his eyes tight, the light flashes still visible through his eyelids despite the protective eyewear. His hands were cupped over his ears against the noise, and he was in terrible pain. Open Town wasn't large. Prefabs four stories high served as housing and covered several grid squares of the city. The recreation area where the bar sat stretched out seemingly aimlessly into the wasteland. The factories and offices supporting the bio project lay on the opposite side of the housing area. After a run to the end of the alley, across the street, and up along it for another 50 yards, Jessup turned a corner and stopped in front of Open Town's sole private gymnasium. He headed for the door.
What the hell are you doing?
Too many crooks. This is where I park my wheels.
He went through the door. Natalia, her gun back in her purse, pushed a lock of hair back from her forehead and followed him.
Sweat in here. Real iron.
She was the only woman in a room full of men, all of them close to naked, gym shorts and athletic shirts, and their bodies dripping sweat. It wasn't climate control, large fans turning lazily overhead, just moving air, not freshening it. Natalia was about to step back through the door onto the street when she saw Jessup disappear behind a curtain. Then she heard a sound, familiar yet not. The curtain slid away, and Jessup straddled out a motorcycle that looked hauntingly similar to the ones the German forces used.
I love this thing!
Evidently, the men in the gymnasium did not, like a fellow nearby doing incline presses.
The damn synth fuel stinks, Bob, damn it!
The lifter's biceps and triceps bulged so large they looked more than human. Jessup rolled the machine slowly past Natalia, stopped, looked at her, and smiled.
You want to get the door, lady?
Natalia got the door, stepped out onto the sidewalk, letting the gymnasium and its smell of sweat fade from her consciousness.
Where did you get...
German guy. Works in hydroponics. Wanted me to teach him diving. Well, kind of worked a trade. He says it's surplus. You ever ride one of these things?
Natalia pulled three pins from her hair and shook it loose, put her hands down along her thighs and tugged her dress up almost to her hips as she straddled the machine behind him.
Yes!
Fine. Electric car. You can't get too far in a wasteland. Can't match this for speed. We go in a likely direction. We don't see the car just circling the city until we do.
It could be in the city, too. Let's go.
This damn thing's fast, ma'am. You're gonna have to hold down tight.
Jessup looked at her and smiled. Natalia shook her head.
I suppose you're right, Bob.
She put her arms around his stomach and held him.
Tight enough?
Ma'am, if you held on to me any tighter, I just might start thinking about forgetting that electric car and your Nazis. Ask up to my room. Hang on now.
The motorcycle jumped the curb and was into the dirt street with a roar. It was a deep crease in the fatty area behind the rib cage, and aside from bleeding a lot and hurting even more, it didn't appear serious to Michael. Holding his side, he ran as best he could in the direction of the rifle shot, relying on the sniper's temporary blindness being total. Paul, unharmed and starting out well north of the fire anyway, was ahead of him.
I got it! Mike!
Michael stopped and stood in the darkness, hurting.
Keep him for me!
With considerable effort, he forced himself to walk. A circuit around the city showed no sign of the electric car with the damaged right rear fender, so they turned back in toward Open Town, toward the housing units. Bob Jessup was a decent motorcycle rider, especially good considering he had to be a beginner. He took his turns very cautiously, which Natalia considered a tribute to his good sense. Rather than trying to impress her with his daring, he was trying to get them to their destination, wherever that turned out to be, alive and uninjured. The glasses she wore helped her eyes against the dust that coated them, but her hair felt gritty and knotted as they turned into the housing area. One of the units was reserved for office personnel, visiting military, and civilian VIPs, the other units for the workers. And there was crime here, like that on the recreation strip. Aside from the fact the buildings were shorter and Natalia was 500 years removed from the 20th century, she was reminded of her one and only visit to an inner-city federal housing project. The project stood in Chicago a few years before the night of the war, and Vladimir negotiated with a Chicago street gang to precipitate summer rioting. The scheme didn't work out, and the following summer went by peacefully in the city. Still, she remembered the look of the place, like a jungle with wild things preying on the inhabitants and the visitors equally. This enclave bore the same look, the same feel. Jessup stopped the motorcycle as they turned the corner of a dirt street. Evidently, he saw the electric car with the damaged fender at the same time she did. Michael sat on a rock, twisting the sling of his rifle in his hands as Paul cleaned the wound near his left kidney.
You are lucky. Very lucky.
All skill. I practiced dodging bullets for a half hour each day.
The sniper, bound hand and foot with plastic restraints, writhed on the ground.
After I came up on him and realized he wasn't kidding, put the restraints on him, put some salve in his eyes. I had to sit on him to do it, though. He must have thought I was trying to torture him or something. Asshole. There!
Paul stepped away. He felt the large bandage in place and could smell the German antiseptic healant spray heavy on the air. Michael started to stand, then thought better of it as pain and stiffness gripped his back when he tried to move, even a little.
Tell him who we are so he knows for sure we're going to kill him if he doesn't talk. The distance we were, his hearing didn't get affected.
Paul looked at Michael in the light of the lantern, then nodded. Paul dropped to one knee beside the sniper and grabbed a handful of the man's jacket.
You know who we are. That's why you and your friends led us around to try to kill us. If you know who we are, you know we'll kill you if you don't cooperate.
Jew!
He tried to spit at Paul, but Paul backhanded him across the face before he could. Paul looked over his shoulder, exchanged glances with Michael, then looked down at the sniper.
Yes, I'm a Jew. And if you don't understand enough English to understand what I'm about to say, then you're shit out of luck. If you know all about Nazis and Jews, you probably heard that your kind, 5 centuries ago, were blamed for killing 6 million of us. You were told that was a lie, that the photographs of dead were from the bombings of Dresden. They weren't. Now.
Paul pulled his knife and put it to the man's throat as he leaned in close to the sweating Nazi's ear.
You may not believe that your kind killed 6 million of my kind, but I believe it. And that's all that matters, because I got a gun and you don't. Now, aside from the fact that you tried killing my brother-in-law and me, aside from the fact that your boss maybe killed my wife's parents, aside from the fact that your boss murdered an infant, and aside from the 6 million dead Jews you fucking Nazis racked up 5 centuries ago, I just don't like your face. And if you don't talk, tell us where Zimmer is, I'm gonna shoot your fucking balls off one at a time. Understand, balls, Nazi? Testes?
Paul looked at Michael and winked. Michael Rourke looked away so he wouldn't laugh.
That's the sound of my gun. Want to hear another sound?
I will tell you, please! Please!
You said you had a gun.
Yeah.
Bob reached down to his left trouser leg and pulled a pistol that looked like a chopped-down version of the midweek issue Lancer 2418A2.
Got a friend makes these. A lot of Marines carried them for backup.
Natalia stepped away from the bike, aware of his eyes on her.
What are you staring at?
Your legs, man. God, they're the longest I've ever seen.
Her dress was still bunched up.
Oh.
How's your real name?
I'm Natalia Tiamarovna.
You? Holy shit, I saw you once, but your hair!
It's dye that washes out.
She took off the fake glasses and dropped them in her purse, taking out the Walter and its suppressor, then threading the suppressor onto the PPKS's extended barrel.
You really on the trail of some Nazis?
Well, Bob, one in particular. And this man we're following might lead me to him. The man we're following is named Armand Gruber. The man I am after is Dietrich Zimmer, the man responsible for what happened to John and Sarah Rourke and the murder of their baby.
We gonna kill him?
Natalia turned and looked at Jessup as she gave the suppressor a good luck twist.
When I find him, Bob. But understand, I will kill Zimmer. I am the only one who should.
Why do you say that?
Natalia ran her free hand back through her hair, feeling the grit and dirt.
If you know who I am, then you know why. We want to see who Gruber is talking with and what is going on. You wait for me to tell you what to do, or you wait here, understand?
You're a major, right?
I was, yes.
Well, ma'am, I was a sergeant, so I guess I'm used to taking some orders. But one thing.
Natalia studied the building. She was only half paying attention.
What one thing?
You're a woman, and I'm a man.
Bob!
If there's trouble, don't go tell me to stand back or anything, because major or not, Bob Jessup don't let no woman take a bullet for him, see?
She looked at him and smiled.
All right, Bob Jessup.
They walked across the parking lot toward the main entrance of the housing unit.
4 floors, 50 apartments to a floor. We can't knock on every door with any hope of finding who Gruber came to meet.
There were 4 stairwells, one at each corner of the building, and no elevators. From the center of the corridor, someone could watch all 4 stairwells, not easily, but satisfactorily if the floor plans were like those used in the building where she stayed with Annie, and keep watch on the parking lot outside.
Here is the plan, Bob. I will take the top floor, you take the second floor. If you see someone coming out into the parking lot and getting into the car...
Are the little guy and the hooker with the blonde hair?
Probably, but possibly just the little guy. Anyway, if you see him, but he didn't pass you, we know he spoke with someone in an apartment on the first floor. If you see him coming down toward the second floor and I didn't see him, we will know his meeting was on the third floor. You understand?
So we let him go and go after whoever it was he met?
That is the idea. 50 apartments on each floor. That still will not be easy.
25 apiece.
I will go in first.
She set down her gun and pulled her hair back and put it up quickly in a little bun.
Follow me after 5 minutes or so. Keep your gun handy, but we cannot kill Gruber, just in case this leads us nowhere. Do you understand?
Any chance of my buying you dinner?
Natalia looked down at her shoes and her ruined stockings and then up into his face.
If this helps me to kill Dietrich Zimmer, Bob Jessup, I will buy dinner for you, and that's a promise.
The man had evidently been faking his discomfort, but when Michael Rourke moved his father's Zippo lighter back and forth a few feet from the man's eyes, the pupils did not track the flame. Temporarily, at least, the man who, with his 5 associates, would have killed them was indeed blind. Paul and Michael exchanged glances. Then Michael asked the question that had been eating away inside of him.
Were you part of the attack on the hospital? Tell us everything.
I had nothing to do with the attack on your family here, Rourke, believe me. I was hired by Zimmer to get you to follow us here and kill you. And that is all.
What's Zimmer planning? Where is he?
You must promise me that you will protect me from Zimmer. You must promise me.
If you help us, we'll help you. What if we brought you back to New Germany, got your eyes fixed, and made a big deal out of how you told us everything you could about Zimmer and his movement, What do you think Zimmer would do to you then? What's your name, anyway?
Decker! Horst Decker!
All right, Decker. Which nut you want to lose first, right or left?
No! Wait! Please wait! But you must!
We'll see you get protection.
In the light from the lamp, as Michael moved it closer, he could see the man's face. Sweat dripped down it, despite the cool wind here. This was sheer terror, plain and simple.
Herr Zimmer! Herr Dr. Zimmer was leaving for the place called Eden.
Son of a bitch.
One of Herr Doctor's lieutenants talks a great deal when he drinks. Herr Dr. Zimmer was going there, but that is all I know, sirs.
Eden. Perfect name and the perfect place for a snake.
Michael Rourke only nodded. His wound hurt. The whole evening was turning into an incident out of some piece of lurid, hard-boiled detective fiction.
And I'm the babe.
Natalia drew her gun from her purse and ran across the parking area and toward the front door of the 4-story building. The shot was from a medium-caliber pistol. She looked back once. Bob Jessup was mounting his motorcycle.
They held him.
She saw the blonde with the tight black vinyl skirt. Where was Armand Gruber? The woman was running from the foyer into the dirt parking lot.
Stop where you are! They want to kill me!
She kept running. Natalia dodged right. Jessup's motorcycle rocketed past Natalia.
You get him! I'm going in, Lenny!
Jessup cut the fork of the bike toward the entrance to the building. There were steps to elevate the first floor. Jessup jumped his machine and took it over the steps, getting the machine up on its rear wheel and using it like a battering ram to punch through the glass door. And he was gone from view. The blonde ran through the parking lot, but not toward the battered electric car. Not toward anything, it seemed, just away. Natalia took off her heels, stuffed them in her purse, and ran after the woman in earnest.
Stop! I did not hurt you!
But the woman kept running. Life as a prostitute, which Natalia was more and more convinced the woman was, evidently didn't breed physical fitness. The woman was slowing down, running clumsily. Natalia started to overtake her. Gunfire sounded from inside the building, but Natalia was committed to this now, chasing down the woman. The woman, as if on cue in some American monster movie, fell, sprawling into the dirt 20 yards ahead of Natalia, and struggled to get up. Natalia jumped, caught the woman at the shoulders, knocking her down again. Natalia rolled past her, came up on her knees, pointing her gun at her.
Stay where you are!
But the woman started running again, evidently more afraid of what she'd seen inside the building than anything another woman could do to her.
Damn!
Natalia bolted after her and in a half dozen strides brought her down again. With a right knee to the woman's abdomen, Natalia knocked the wind out of her. And now Natalia straddled her chest, the muzzle of the suppressor against the tip of the woman's nose.
What do you run from? Answer me!
They killed him!
Who was killed? The man in the bar?
Yes, let me go!
No! Who killed him? Tell me! Also, help me, I will take you back inside!
No! 3 men! Nazis, I think!
Why?
I do not know!
Why?
He was selling information to them, and they killed him!
Natalia stood up, her dress torn up the side seam. She looked at the prostitute.
Get out of here or wait until the police come. Someone will have reported the shots. Your choice!
Natalia turned away from her and ran back toward the building. The motorcycle was beside the base of the stairs leading toward the second floor and above. Natalia put on her shoes over her torn stockings and started up the stairs.
It never stops.
Natalia ran up the stairs, trying to pinpoint the sound, passing the second floor, reaching the third floor, and noticing a partially open door midway along the length of the corridor. She ran to the open door. With her purse slung crossbody and back, she held the suppressor-fitted Walter in both hands. Natalia slowed as she neared the doorway, moving along the wall now, listening.
You are just another meddling American.
You all think you are John Rourke. You should have gone back to your little snow globe under the water. Well, you'll soon be one less idealist to deal with.
Natalia turned into the doorway. Bob Jessup was on the living room floor, a gun a few inches from his extended fingers, blood on his hand and covering the front of his shirt. 2 men lay on the floor at the other side of the living room, one of them a stranger, the other Armand Gruber. A third man, evidently one of the Nazis, stood over Bob Jessup, a pistol in his hand, his body weaving slightly as he aimed the pistol toward Bob Jessup's head.
You will never tell what we have transmitted.
The Nazi swayed for an instant longer, then fell back. His pistol discharged into the small sofa, a cloud of stuffing puffed around the hole. Natalia scanned the room. There was a high-frequency transmitter in an open suitcase on the small coffee table, still turned on, the frequency diode reader visible. She committed the numbers to memory as she crossed the room. The police sirens were louder now. Smoke rose from a large ceramic ashtray where pieces of something had been burned. Natalia dropped to her knees beside Bob Jessup. He had at least 2 sucking chest wounds, and there was nothing she could do for him without an emergency room staff standing by. She set down her pistol and raised his head.
Bob!
I'm sorry.
He winked at her, and her cheeks flushed.
Cry.
Natalia put her ear beside his lips. His body seemed to stiffen, and his head lolled back. Natalia raised his head. Bob Jessup's dead eyes stared up. She closed them and gently set his head on the floor. Natalia stood up, blood all over her dress and her bare arms. Bob Jessup's blood. The police sirens were loud now. She stared down at Bob Jessup.
Am I a curse to men?
She closed her eyes, shook her head, turned away, and walked over to the ashtray. She took the Bali song from her thigh and opened it. What had been burned was clearly a magnetic tape, because within the pile of ashes, as she stirred it with her knife, was a cassette. There was nothing marked on it. Built into the transmitter was a high-speed player for audio tape. Whatever had been on the tape was broadcast at high speed, then the tape burned. Armand Gruber brought it to the Nazis. But what was it? Natalia looked at Bob Jessup there on the floor, the pool of blood around him still growing, but slowly. He had whispered a single word to her, cry. She had tears for him, but there was no time to shed them. Natalia ran from the room. She mounted Jessup's motorcycle, kick-started it, and pushed the machine toward the door. She had nothing to lose except time if she waited for the police, and time might now be very valuable. She gunned the machine through the foyer, through the doorway, and down the steps. Natalia geared up as she saw the lights from the slow-moving electric police cars coming up near the complex entrance. Eluding the police wouldn't even be a challenge.